This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 618 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, September 28, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. School committee members were in the municipal building along with some of the public. Other members of the public joined via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distance requirements of this pandemic period. The total meeting runs around 2 hours and 20 minutes, so I split the meeting into two segments. First covers the opening, the citizens' comments, the introduction of Lily Rivera, and the DLI Digital Learning Integration Team presentation and update, approximately an hour and 4 minutes. The second segment covers the discussion action items, discussion-only items, the consent agenda, through to the closing of the meeting. Links to the meeting agenda and associated documents released for this meeting are included in the show notes. The link to my notes taken during the meeting is also provided. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting, September 28, 2021.
All right, discussion action items, Dr. Hearn.
Okay, so your first discussion action item is Franklin TV board appointment, and I recommend the appointment of Rose Turco to the Franklin TV board of directors.
Okay, is there a motion to recommend Rose Turco to the Franklin TV board of directors?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
I just wanted to tell people about Rose Turco as a retired math teacher from Franklin High School, one of the most extraordinary teachers that, you know, came to us from the high school. And she is serves on the board, Franklin TV, to really make sure that good programming is out there, to monitor the budget and the funding and all that. So I just wanted to say a few words about Rose. She is quite a remarkable woman and serves the community in many, many different ways. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I just want to comment. Yes, Rose Turco is my favorite teacher ever. And she's the reason why I got into education. So she holds a special place in my heart, and she's lovely.
Oh, thank you, Jen. That's good. I'm glad that you said that.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead, Judy.
Okay, I don't understand why the school department is supporting Rose Turco, where she doesn't work for the school department, to this position.
There's no funding involved. This is just, she's serving for the good of the community. It's just that, just to have a representative represented, there's a lot of different public programming that involves education. So to have a representative, we just appoint her. There's no money involved. This is, she serves just for the, from the good of the
community. I'm not questioning the money on this. She's more than capable. I'm just questioning how the school department is recommending Rose Turco to this position on the board. Do we recommend other people on this board as well?
It's just the guidance for the, it's the way the protocols and the law is set for cable access TV, that there are representatives, one is, and that's just the way the protocols are for the cable boards of TV.
So she's to represent the school department on the board?
She is one of the representatives that is sent from the school committee, right. And there are several that are appointed by the town council.
Okay, so we just appoint her.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Judy. Got it. All right. Any other discussion? All right. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. Jen?
Aye.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ann? MASC delegate.
Okay, the next discussion action item is to have you select a delegate to the MASC annual meeting of delegates. At the MASC annual meeting, the delegates vote on your, a delegate would vote on your behalf on the resolutions, which you will be discussing later on this evening, and then voting on at the next meeting. Denise Spencer has been serving as your liaison to MASC. The recommendation is that the school committee appoint Denise Spencer to serve as this school committee's delegate to the annual MASC annual meeting of delegates. The conference is the end of the first week of November, so this would be pending her reelection.
Mm-hmm. So I will entertain a motion to recommend the committee appoint Denise Spencer to serve as the committee's delegate to the annual MASC annual meeting of delegates. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Second. Okay.
We want you there.
Discussion? Questions?
Just a question. I didn't realize that. I don't care about the position, but I'm wondering, like, why would, is there a timeline? Is that why we're doing it now before the election? Because I didn't even think of that point, but you just brought that up, so.
Yeah, there is a timeline. So you would want to vote on a delegate and then vote on your resolutions at some point before the meeting. The meeting is
the day after elections.
The day after elections. So
what happens, and I'm not trying to be negative.
No, that's fine.
I love a plan B.
Sure.
What happens if that's not the case?
You would not have a delegate represent the Franklin School Committee at the convention unless you held a special meeting to denote a delegate.
It's interesting, Jen, because the way it works is everybody has their, many different school committees have their elections at different times,
yeah.
So ours just happens to fall in an inconvenient time, so we have to kind of take a chance on it, so that we're ready.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion, a second, any further discussion? All right, seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes!
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise, do you think you'd vote for yourself?
Sure.
Yes, I think so too. Elise?
Yes.
And Morgan, yes, definitely. Motion carries. All right, policy waiting, first reading.
Okay, so I'll just frame these next two items together. Policy EBCFA, face coverings, is coming to you after being reviewed again by the policy subcommittee last week. The discussion there was to put it forward to the school committee, recommending that the first reading be waived in order to adopt an amended face covering policy. The reason for this is because although we have we are obligated to the DESE mask mandate, our current face covering policy is not consistent with that mask mandate. It is more restrictive, and we are following the mask mandate and would like to suggest the changes that you see in your packet. So I recommend waiving the first reading of policy EBCFA face coverings as discussed.
Is there a motion to recommend waiving the first reading of policy EBCFA face coverings as discussed? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion, questions, comments? Okay. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor recommend waiving the first reading of policy EBCFA face coverings as discussed. Jen?
Yep.
Tim?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Jim, very good. We hear you. Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
Finnegan? Yes. Policy adoption, Dr. Hurd.
Okay, so what you see in your packet is an amended policy, EBCFA, face coverings as discussed. What we'll note is that references to social distancing are removed, and this does not include face coverings being required while outside, which your current policy does require. There's a few other minor changes as well. The other piece that the policy subcommittee wanted to be sure to include is an updated area related to student noncompliance to reflect what is in the health and safety plan that we included at the beginning of the year. So I recommend approval, adoption of policy EBCFA face coverings as discussed.
Okay, is there a motion to adopt policy EBCFA face coverings as discussed?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion,
yes.
Comments? MJ, and then?
No, you might answer my question.
Okay, MJ, go ahead then.
Oh, I just want to make it clear that for all of the policy meetings that we had specifically about this policy, the input from participants was taken to heart, the comments and suggestions they're included in this policy. The one thing that people asked about, the metrics for determining when this can end Those have not been put together. Not that they haven't been put together, but they haven't been finalized yet. And at the point when those are available, we'll certainly share those. And just an aside, this is not the last time we're going to see this policy. Mm-hmm. That's all.
I was going to say that was a piece of what I was going to ask. You know, I know that there's been new information that was given about the 80% and all that. So I'm assuming that this is going to be part of your ongoing policy discussions moving forward, and they'll just kind of evolve as that guidance evolves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. See, I'm glad you went first.
Any further comments, discussion, committee?
Okay.
Go ahead, Tim.
I have a question.
Sure.
Yeah, I got a little confused on the reference to the 80%. I mean, I know what that the 80% is, but is that addressed anywhere in the policies? Is something Franklin is aligned with at this point, or is that a topic of another policy discussion?
So I can jump in. That would be a topic of another policy discussion. So the policy meeting was last week, and we just learned new information from the state yesterday related to the threshold of 80% as a vaccination rate threshold to aim for, after which we can apply to the department to have our vaccinated individuals in those schools not wear masks. So it is going to be part of ongoing policy discussion. We have set a few additional meeting dates in the month of October, and we are actively gathering that information in the Franklin Public Schools about our local enrolled student and faculty and staff data.
Can I just ask a clarifying question, because it sounded like you were, I know there was new information recently, but the 80% threshold, I think, is something that's been was put out there a while ago. So what was new? I mean, I know the date of the 15th was new, but other than that, has the topic of the 80% been a part of our, because that's been known for a while. So has that been part of our discussions yet?
It has, I think, been part of the discussions. We don't have policy language to suggest there, but we've been waiting for the additional information as well as how close Franklin is to that number. I guess the new information is that the mandate was extended to November 1st, that the 80% threshold application date, so to speak, is October 15th instead of October 1. And the state is considering additional metrics, but they don't have additional information to share about what those might be.
Okay.
And the process, Tim, I'm sorry, the process around which we applied to the state was further clarified.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All set, Tim. Any other? Yeah, go ahead. Let me do Elise and then we'll do Denise.
Okay.
Because she's way over there and then you do it.
Sure. Okay, Tim, something that helped me in one of our meetings that I'm not sure if this helps clarify is that the number that Dr. Hearn's been putting in the back to school update as far as percentage of kids 16 to 19 who are vaccinated, that's ages 16 to 19 living in Franklin, not necessarily attending the Franklin Public Schools. They could be going to Tri-County or a number of other enrolled in other schools. So we're trying to figure out the percentage of students enrolled in the Franklin Public Schools that are vaccinated. So that's the number that we that the district is trying to get for us. And so without that number, we don't know how close we are at or above or below 80%. I don't know if that's helpful, but it was helpful for me when you shared that with me.
All right. Yep. Thanks, Elise. I think it is helpful. I do have some curiosity around the age cutoff because it sounds higher than 12, which, you know, I'm just curious how we're thinking about middle schools versus high schools. And I know there's a lot of discussions that have to happen there, but I think, you know, we know community members are going to be interested in path forward. And how do we align with what the state is recommending and what are the metrics that are going to get us to a point where we feel comfortable to be able to be out of masks.
Denise?
I was just going to say...
Oh, sorry, Lisa.
No, I was just going to say, I'm trying to give you an eye. As a policy subcommittee, we're looking forward to getting those numbers to Tim, and it seems to be careful work to get those numbers and make sure that the district's giving us the accurate percentages. And so once we have that from enrolled students and staff members, then we'll know where we are, and hopefully for one of our upcoming meetings. Okay.
So, thank you.
All set now? Good. Denise, sorry.
No, it's fine. I know in August when Riley first came out with the mandate, he kept saying he's going to have more metrics, more benchmarks other than the 80%. Has he shared anything?
No.
Okay. So just as other people are frustrated, we're also frustrated because we just, and I know that we discussed this at our subcommittee meeting last week, whenever it was, I don't know.
I think at every meeting.
At every meeting. Yeah. You know, to kind of help Tim too, like we can be stricter than the state. We can't be more lenient. So I think that it's also helpful for us to, you know, to kind of share that.
Yep.
Our hands,
are tied. Mm-hmm. Judy, I didn't want to skip over you. I didn't know if you had any comments or questions.
No, I'm all set.
Okay, anyone else on the committee, anything else? Okay, so now we have a motion and a second. Do we? I can't remember if I said it.
Yeah,
we did. Okay, good, very good. Yeah, because this was the discussion part of it. So yeah, all right, so we have no further. So seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to adopt policy EBCFA face coverings as discussed. Roll call vote. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
Vinny and Tim? Motion carries. Okay. Discussion only items.
So the first discussion only item are the MASC resolutions. I think Denise will share the resolutions with you, and we've done a little bit of reading and may have some ability to clarify and answer any questions you have about any specific implications for Franklin.
Okay. So should I?
Yeah.
I'll do one at a time, or should I just?
Yes.
Yeah, why don't you just go?
Yeah, just
one at a time.
All right, so, yeah. All right, resolution one, dedicated funding for school-based clinics and services. Therefore, it be resolved that MASC support proposals that would establish dedicated funding for school-based physical health and mental health clinics and services. Rationale: maintaining physical, social, and emotional wellness in students translates into establishing an optimal learning environment and sets students up for future excellent health standards, in addition to decreasing absences in school discipline referrals, reduction in Medicaid expenditures, reduced inappropriate emergency room use, decreased pregnancies, and increased overall physical and mental health.
So maybe we should see if anyone has any questions, comments. We do it that way, makes sense. We just kind of, rather than trying to remember all of them at once, any comments or discussion on this? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, let me go through. I don't want to just go. Jen, I'm just going to go through so I don't skip anyone. You're all set?
I'm confused.
Okay.
What are we doing with these? I thought they were... We're not voting on them.
Discussion
right?
only.
Yeah.
We're just discussing.
You're going to take them all to us?
She has to.
I have to.
Just the whereas. Yeah.
Just the bottom part. I'm not going to read all eight.
Just the whereas.
No, I'm good.
You good? Okay, Tim, any questions, comments? We'll just go through quickly. I don't want to skip anyone.
I'm good. Thank you.
Judy, all set?
All set.
Okay, MJ.
Just a comment that we do so many of these things. We have programs in place here in Franklin, and as it's noted here, that it's sponsored by the Framingham School Committee.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only comment.
Okay. Denise?
Nope.
Elise?
All right, I guess my one question is, in the past we've had resolutions come through like this, and we voted on them one at a time, right, and sent them forward, but these ones we're just talking about
tonight,
and
then we'll vote, and we'll vote. Tonight's the discussion card, and then we'll vote on them.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
So we just in case, it sort of clarifies before we vote, but tonight's just discussion, because there's so many of them, there's so much information, that it's just tonight's purpose is just to kind of get the information out there.
Okay, I understand.
I just wanted to speak to, just for years, just having worked in the schools, one of the things we talked about a lot is, wouldn't it be good if we had the services all right there where the kids are, so that because the kids are all there, if the after-school services for mental health, and it makes it so much easier, these wraparound services right at a school-based thing. So I can understand the rationale for that, and I see its power. Something I know for me personally, and having discussion with counselors over the years, is to say, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could bring all the services where the kids are? So I think maybe that was one of the reasons for this particular resolution. So second one.
All right, resolution two. Homework gap and Wi-Fi internet access. Be it resolved that MASC file for and support legislation which seeks to provide free broadband internet to all K-12 students in Massachusetts. Be it further resolved that MASC support federal initiatives and legislation to improve national high-speed broadband internet infrastructure. Expansion the FCC's E-rate program to include homes of K-12 students, or any other steps to expand free access to reliable high-speed broadband to the students of our nation.
Any questions, comments on this particular resolution? Oh, there one's name. Okay, keep going there.
All right. Resolution three, IDEA Full Funding Act. Therefore, be it resolved that the MASC calls upon the Massachusetts Congressional Delegation to reintroduce and promote the passage of the IDEA Full Funding Act.
All right. Any questions on that particular one, or comments or anything? Okay.
Resolution four, recess. Therefore, be it resolved that the MASC support legislation, current bills S383H695, calling for at least 20 minutes of uninterrupted, supervised, safe, and unstructured free play recess per day, which cannot be excluded from structured learning time requirements and may not increase the total number of hours required in the school year for Massachusetts elementary school students.
Questions or comments? We already have that in place here.
Oh, go ahead, Elise.
Go ahead, Elise. I'll just go this way.
Okay. I do have a question on that. So does that mean when it says cannot be excluded from structured learning time requirement, does that mean that 20 minutes is included in structured learning time?
That's how I'm interpreting that, yeah.
Because that would be phenomenal, because when we're talking about the core competencies of social emotional learning, that is time on learning, right? Mm-hmm. Recess is time on learning, especially when it's facilitated where it is in a lot of the schools. So that would be huge, actually. And I wonder if we could change that number. Like, does it have to be 20? It has to be 20 because it's coming from everybody.
It'll be going to all the districts.
Okay, okay. All right, just a question.
Did you want to go 60?
Yeah, I do. 60, right. Yeah. 5 days a week, 60 minutes a day.
Yeah. Any other questions? MJ, go ahead.
I was just gonna, it's great that the MASC Board of Directors finally has this moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else on the committee? Also? Okay. Zero tolerance. Resolution five, Denise?
All right. Resolution five, zero tolerance policies. Therefore, it be resolved that the MASC call upon the legislature to enact or amend legislation to encourage the use of restorative, therapeutic, and educational approaches to incidents whenever possible over the use of zero tolerance policies in order to provide students the best chance to remain in the public school systems of the Commonwealth.
Any comments followed? Okay, very good.
Resolution six, alternative to MCAS. Therefore, be it resolved that the MASC call upon the legislature to establish a commission to research and to analyze alternative means for students to demonstrate academic achievement, which can be used to satisfy graduation requirements for individual students and accountability standards for Massachusetts public schools and school districts.
Any comments, questions?
Yeah.
MJ?
I find it curious that the MASC Board of Directors is putting this forward. Several years ago, I was on the Student Assessment Committee of the MASC, which was tasked with implementing MCAS. And it's, I don't know when it changed. I honestly don't. But, at that time, we were considering alternative assessments to be used. And here we are. Mm-hmm. Let's make everything an alternative. Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting.
Mm-hmm. How long ago were you on that?
A little while ago.
Any further,
Elise?
Go ahead, Elise.
Okay, where was it? So this is going to be different than MCAS ALT assessments that we do, right?
Right.
So this is just like students who choose.
I don't know. Okay. I think that it might be a proposal that would come forward from some study group, but a study group to look at alternatives to kind of the multiple choice, essay-based test, more performance-based, project-based type of assessment.
Right, okay, I see. So this is just establishing a commission. This isn't making any decisions. This is just saying we're going to establish a commission that will study this probably for years, and then something will come down the pike later on. Okay.
And can I clarify?
Through the chair.
Yeah, this. I don't think these are just resolutions that they're setting for.
Right.
So there's not even an action associated with any of these yet.
True. It's just saying that MASC delegates all agree on these things.
And then the committees all vote to support and endorse the recommendation of these.
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You're the expert in this.
I'm not an expert.
You are.
But yes, they will move it forward. If they have enough votes.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further comments, questions? Okay, next one, Resolution 7.
Resolution 7, School Committees and Receivership. Be it further resolved that MASC support local initiatives and legislation to restore school committee oversight of the superintendent and or receiver, including but not limited to goal setting, performance review, and the evaluation process.
Yeah, read the rationale.
All right, rationale. Receivership is an equity issue which can be seen in the types of districts that are taken into receivership. High population Latino communities and economically disadvantaged. Receivership strips away the voices of the community that elected school committee members in their communities. This resolution gives the power back to the board, and there are no clearly set guidelines on the measures which need to be taken for districts to get back local control with no clear time frame on the expectation that DESE will turn around a district.
Okay. I think there was a resolution prior to this, the note about school committee oversight of the superintendent. Denise, I'm not sure if you read the first part. File for and support legislation which preserve the authority of the elected body of the school committee.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Therefore, be it resolved that the MASC file for and support legislation which seeks to preserve the authority of the elected body, the school committee, as provided in Mass General Law, Chapter 69, Section 1K, by deleting the words "and school committee" as noted, and by inserting the following: nothing in this section shall permit the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education or the Commissioner to remove the authority of the school committee.
Apologies. It's okay. It happens.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There are a lot.
Okay. Any questions or comments on that? Okay. Moving right along.
Resolution 8, electric school buses. Therefore, be it resolved that MASC petition Congress to appropriate $30 billion for improving the electrical supply infrastructure and providing electric school buses and charging stations.
That's pretty self-explanatory.
Okay.
All right. And how about Resolution 9?
Final one, Resolution 9, prohibiting the use of Native American mascots. Therefore, be it resolved that the MASC support legislation calling for regulations prohibiting public schools from using an athletic team name, logo, or mascot which names, refers to, represents, or is associated with Native Americans, including aspects of Native American cultures and specific Native American tribes.
Pretty self-explanatory. Any questions on that, comments? MJ, did you know?
It's self-explanatory, yes, but how many of us went to schools a few years ago that had mascots that were found to be offensive? They changed the mascots to some things that people think are equally as offensive. But there are so many districts
that are continuing to, you know, use some of the mascots that they're mentioning here, and they have no intention of, you know, letting go of them. I mean, as an example of the change in mascots, I didn't go there, but Natick High School was the Redmen, and they changed their mascot to the Redhawks, and the way that they came up with Redhawks is when their new building was being put up, a Redhawk crashed into the cafeteria window, mm-hmm. and that's how they caught it.
Did he survive? He was a warrior. He put one out.
I'm not sure, but I thought that was an interesting way to come up with a mascot.
Yeah, that's interesting. Any further comments on that one? No. Okay. Very good. So we'll vote next week. Yeah, it just gives everyone a chance to kind of look them over and get a little bit of a discussion and get some feedback. SO3 funding plan, Dr. Hearn?
Great. So Mia and I have a brief presentation to share the current thinking related to funding through SO3, which is the third round of federal stimulus money under this ESSER title. There was some additional money through a different source, CDRF. Just to get started, the Rennie Center for Education, Research, and Policy had a nice blog article recently, and I pulled this quote from it. Schools need to use this one-time funding to invest in programs and innovations that will lead to long-term benefits and tackle the long-standing challenges of our current education system. I felt that this quote accurately captured a call to action in terms of how we spend ESSER III, but also validating, in my opinion, given how we've chosen to spend some of the other coronavirus relief funds. And I think the digital learning presentation earlier tonight kind of demonstrates a long-standing challenge that we had was supporting digital learning, and we know that it's going to be transformative and lead to long-term benefits. So I think this quote kind of accurately captures where we are. The Rennie Center article also had a number of suggestions focusing on ways to address learning loss in particular, which are allowable expenses from the grant, including mental health, high-quality, culturally responsive curriculum, district-wide diagnostic testing, diversifying the teaching force, internet connectivity and tech support, family engagement communication tools, integrated student support, which includes wraparound services in the community, early college programs, and a very specific program that they're using in Boston called Campus Without Walls, which allows schools to kind of learn virtually together and break down barriers across the city. I included this list again because I felt like it was validating of some of the ways in which we've spent earlier funding sources, including the high quality culturally responsive curriculum with the pilot of illustrative math in particular, and the district-wide diagnostic testing, among other things. These next few slides are summaries of what you had seen in the summer at the workshop, and Miriam will briefly touch upon coronavirus relief funding in the past 18 months or so.
Sure, thanks. So we did receive state coronavirus prevention money from the Department of Ed. We were allocated and we spent $173,225 last year on the VLA, staff members, tent rentals for mask breaks, and materials and subscriptions. We also received other funding through CVRF Coronavirus Relief School Lunch Nutrition Money, $10,485. We had a summer vacation learning grant, which was spent on our Summer Learning Academy. We had a special support earmark of $20,834, which was spent on remote learning services, and a food service infrastructure grant, which was spent on software and equipment, just under $30,000. The coronavirus relief funds that we were allocated and also spent at the end of last year, $1,156,275. Also fully expended, portion on VLA staff, again, also digital learning integrationists that you heard from tonight, permanent building substitutes, technology and tech support, tent rentals for mask breaks and material subscriptions and PPE. Our ESSER I money, we are currently allocated $123,235. At June 30th, we had about $92,618 left. As of now, we probably have about $45,000-ish. We did spend some of that this year. Last year, we spent it on interventionists. Our planned use for this year are also for interventionists. We did spend some of it also on tents for mask breaks this year. Going forward for ESSER II money, we are looking at an allocation of $475,496 to be spent on counselor and counseling interns. We have already hired a counselor and we are in the process of filling the counseling intern positions. We have a nurse leader in an expanded role doing some COVID special project support. Permanent substitutes continue throughout the buildings. Our Summer Learning Academy, spent a portion of ESSER II funds on that as well, and on interventionists once the ESSER I grant is exhausted. And going forward right now, we are presenting you with the ESSER III grant. We've been allocated $1,046,173. That grant is due on Monday. And we will have to spend at least 20% on addressing learning loss as a result of the pandemic and disruptions as a result of the pandemic. It must be tied to our in-person school reopening plan, and it must involve stakeholder input, and Dr. Hood is going to tell you a little more about that.
Thanks, Mary. I think it's important to note the time frame that we're talking about. So ESSER III funding can be spent up through September of 2024. ESSER II is September of 23, and ESSER I needs to be fully expended by the September of 22, so the end of this year, roughly. I think this recovery and the idea of addressing learning loss is not going to be solved in one year. And so the strategy is to apply ESSER I and ESSER II funds try to work our ESSER III funding into plans for FY23 and FY24. Some needs I think are emerging that may need to be addressed more immediately, and we'll talk about those when the funding plan comes up. That being said, we have found that we've had plans for spending on ESSER I and had trouble spending it all in that time, so it carried over into the next year. We may see ESSER II funding continuing to carry over into next year. So we are trying to be really mindful about not spending it all at once and building multiple, having it support students for multiple years. We also, in putting this proposal together, want to be strategic. I think kind of at first glance, $1 million feels like a sizable chunk. But when you're talking about 2 or 3 years worth of expenses, it doesn't go that far. So we need to be strategic, and we need to make sure that we're applying it in consideration with other funding sources that we have available, which may include the operating budget or capital opportunities. The town of Franklin has ARPA funding, which is continued relief funding going to the municipality and the county. And I would like to give credit to the town administrator, Jamie Helen, who has been extremely collaborative through the last 18 months, particularly when it comes to strategic use of funding. The town has supported a number of the facilities investments, as you know, the UBGI. They also supported PPE and technology, and has been collaborative in conversations with us about this round of funding with the town, which similarly lasts for a few years. So I do want to make sure to note that. Really feel fortunate having a partner with Jamie as the town administrator to support students and residents here in town. There are some state funding earmarks that we can apply
We have one that was just announced from Senator Spilka's office that is to support mental health services on the order of $50,000. DESE-sponsored programs also are funded through some of the relief monies, and some of the things that we had intended to spend our money on have been actually supported by the department. So that's something that we're being mindful of. And other grants that exist as well. There are a couple special education specific grants through ARPA funding, for example, that are other funding sources. So we'll hear about what stakeholders were suggesting and calling for, but just because something didn't make it into the ESSER funding proposal doesn't mean that it may not be appropriate and funded elsewhere. We sent a survey out within the past few weeks in order to elicit information from stakeholders, and we had 696 responses, which I thought was really pretty good. The survey was a little confusing and a little wordy, but we took it directly from the grant in order to be able to kind of more easily interpret it for the funding plan, and actually borrowed it from a couple other districts who had done something similar. The stakeholder groups that are represented here are ones that were required to be consulted as part of the process. And these numbers are going to add up to more than 696 because people could have selected more than one stakeholder group. I did notice a couple errors where a few people had indicated that they were part of all stakeholder groups or perhaps felt that they were representing all stakeholder groups. Where possible, I made adjustments if I knew, but more often than not, I was unable to kind of clear that up. So the stakeholder survey, you know, as far as individuals goes, we had this data to return, but like any survey, there are errors inherent in it. The next set of slides are a little clumsy, but the funding area is listed on the left, and what I had done was quantified the ranking. There was a 5-point scale with one being not important and five being very important, and then developed an overall average rating, and then ranked them from most important to least important in the eyes of the stakeholders. Anything that's highlighted is a proposed area for funding using ESSER III funds. So on this page, it would be increasing personnel and services to support holistic student needs, including guidance counselors, adjustment counselors, nurses, psychologists, and or social workers. This is an area that we've invested in a lot so far. And so, so we have a small piece here in this funding area. Although they ranked high, increasing staff and opportunities for arts, enrichment, world language, athletics, and elective courses, and facilities improvements, not proposing to fund them through ESSER III. I think this survey does provide some valuable information about what parents in particular are looking for, since 518 individuals said that they were representing families. We too want to provide more opportunities for arts, enrichment, world language, athletics, and elective courses. It is, I think, a bit more complicated in terms of scheduling and not as simple as just applying more money to make it happen, and maybe something that would be funded through the operating budget, either with additional funds or perhaps in a cost-neutral way. So we'd like to take more time to put a plan together, because world language in the elementary in particular is something that I think we want to provide to students. Facilities improvements as well. Should additional facilities improvements be necessary? I think that there may be opportunities with other funding sources to support facilities, and we've put a sizable amount already into our facilities. Air conditioning was something that came up in the comments. That would be a project that is, I think, beyond the scope of what this grant could provide. There may also be infrastructure type monies to support school buildings as a result of climate change. There has been some talk about that. So there may be other opportunities, but wanted to acknowledge that that came up a couple of different times in the comments. Tutoring programs and support ranked high, including early literacy tutoring and peer tutoring programs. Building partnerships and strengthening those with community-based organizations was also one of the top areas. And I thought this one was important. This happened to be one of the areas that the counseling review showed. Franklin would be likely to reap a large return on the investment, given some of the partnerships and relationships that we had already established. And that with somebody dedicated and designated to help do that outreach and develop those partnerships, we would be well situated. So that's something that we're proposing to explore. Career technical education innovation pathways and AP courses is also among the top on this first page. There are perhaps some additional grants to pursue in this area. Academic support staff is something that we're proposing to continue funding, in part because we're ranked high in terms of stakeholder input, and we also want to make sure that we're continuing to support some of the things that we have initially invested in, such as our interventionists. Did not propose to support the instructional materials. We are, I think, well suited right now with science and math and social studies, although not at the high school. Can expect something coming from the high school in the area of social studies. We do anticipate ELA needs in the future, but we're not yet ready to make a commitment or recommendation about what those would be. Also think that there may be alternative sources to provide the instructional materials. One of the largest areas that came up among multiple stakeholder groups was creating transitional programs for students with mental health or behavioral related absences returning to school. We'll talk a bit more about that as we talk a little bit about the funding proposal. In terms of co-teaching, I don't intend to go through every single one of these. We do have co-teaching, and I think would like to do a review of our co-teaching practices prior to investing additional funding in there. Screening assessments is something that we have been working with, and I'm going to just continue to move forward because the five areas that we have proposed to spend the ESSER-3 funding on are already listed. So these are some of the other funding areas. Recognizing that the funding averages is going to be heavily weighted towards the larger number of individuals who responded, which would be parents and guardians, also broke down the information by stakeholder group to see what areas emerged most frequently among multiple stakeholder groups. And that would include personnel and services to meet holistic needs with, I think, seven. Community partnerships to support mental and physical well-being with six. Five stakeholder groups ranked transitional programs for students with mental health related absences as among their top priorities. Academic support staff had three, and tutoring programs was among the top priorities for three stakeholder groups as well. And so with the team, we developed this list, which would be in the following areas. The first slide being social-emotional well-being, the second slide being academics. Continue to invest in personnel services to support holistic needs. This would be for a social worker for 2 years to help our counselors and our administrators as a liaison with outside agencies to and families to support students. In terms of leveraging community partnerships to support mental and physical well-being, this is where in the summer we had wondered that we might suggest a diversity, equity, and inclusion coordinator. Looking around at some other districts, they have merged a DEI coordinator with a director of social and emotional learning, which could serve the district well in the area, not exclusively, but in the area of leveraging community partnerships to support mental and physical well-being, as well as attending to diversity, equity, and inclusion needs in the district And I think social emotional learning and equity go hand in hand when we think about students developing, for example, their identity and the opportunities and gaps in those opportunities that may exist in Franklin. The next area came up very, very strong. It was not among the topmost, but it was mentioned very frequently, which are transitional programs for students with mental health related absences. I feel like we're a bit behind in this regard, that other districts have programs that are supported by adjustment counselors and paraprofessionals to support students who are transitioning back to school after being hospitalized, either with a physical illness or a mental illness. It could be a concussion, and providing students with additional supports. Data from other districts has been really strong in this regard. Lucas had shared some information from his experience in Bellingham, and Josh his experience in Hopkinton, about the reduction in repeat hospitalizations that have resulted as a result of having these programs in place. And then in terms of academic support, we have some funding proposed here to continue to support student learning through the elementary interventionists. Right now, our elementary schools have, not counting Title I, have two, with the exception of Keller, who has a few additional FTEs for interventions at the elementary level. Over time, want to look at our data and make sure that we're staffing our elementary schools appropriately with interventionists, while also providing support to teachers to do interventions and enrichments with all of their students in Tier 1. And then lastly, we have tutoring programs to support student learning. So this would be after-school tutoring for middle school and high school. There were several comments in the survey about equity in terms of tutoring support. Some families being able to provide additional tutoring at home, and other families not having the means to support that. So want to mitigate that with developing tutoring programs in the after school to augment what we're currently doing at the middle school, which is Homework Club, and provide more targeted support for students' academics at the middle and high school. Paula and Lucas and Miriam could also answer any questions or comments that you have, but this brings us to the conclusion. Our challenge with all of this is going to be developing a plan between FY22 and FY24 to sustain investments that are needed in the long term. So I didn't want anybody to think that that's not on our mind. It certainly is on our mind as we consider spending the one-time funding. And I want to thank everybody for their interest. Beyond ESSER 3, I think having some input through the survey about priorities in the community will be helpful as we think about other funding things that come up, including the next round of our operating budget. So happy to take questions and comments.
Let me just go through. Jen, questions, comments?
Thank you.
All set. Tim? I'll come back to Tim. Judy?
All set.
All set. MJ?
I'm good.
Denise?
Just a couple. I think it's important that you highlighted in those last few slides that it's for the costs for the next 2 years, because that's how long the money's going to last. After those 2 years, where are we getting that money from? So I like to see that we're thinking about it, but where is it coming from? Also, let's see. Arts enrichment, the programs that parents would like to see back in our schools. I'd like to hear more about how we could get those programs back. I know that it's not just about budget, but I'm sure that that is a large part of it. The director of social emotional learning and equity, will there be a job description available soon?
Yes, so just like we did with some of the other new positions, we would bring a job description to you for approval before posting.
Okay, great.
But we're collecting those from some of our neighboring communities.
Perfect, thank you.
All set. Elise, any questions, comments?
I guess I was, when I flipped to that proposed funding slide, where it's actually talking about the initiatives going forward. I was very excited to see that Director of Social Emotional Learning and Equity. I've been talking to the Director of Wellness in Medway last week, and after getting off the phone with him and talking about some of the things that they've been doing, I was like, why don't we have that? And then I flip open the slide and it's right there in front of me. And so it was really exciting to me to see that. I've heard great things about the BRIGHT program, so I think that's awesome too. These are three very strong bullets, I think, as far as my priorities go. Just a question there. So at the bottom of that slide, the adjustment counselor / ESP, it says that twice. So does that mean two adjustment counselors, two ESPs?
Yes. Okay. So the idea is that we would have one program at the high school and then a shared program across the middle schools.
Gotcha.
We still need to figure out a bit more of the model about, you know, kind of physically where they'd be located. But in terms of numbers, it would be kind of one at the high school and then a shared adjustment counselor ESP for the three middle schools.
But housed in one building?
But housed in one building.
Gotcha. Okay, and this is, the grant's due on Monday, I think you said, right?
Yes.
And so is this something, it's so important, it's probably important yesterday, you know? So is this, how quickly could we get a BRIGHT program up and running and hired and?
I think we could get the BRIGHT program moving pretty quickly, and
okay.
I think the need would be most felt at the high school, based on kind of what we know about students.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, although some of these are sort of planned for the future, that is, especially at the high school, one area that we wanted to take more quick action on.
Gotcha. That's really exciting. That's great. Thanks. It was great to see these.
I'll send this.
Yeah.
Good. I just wanted to follow up too with the Director of Social Emotional Learning, such an incredibly powerful position. We look at what Ryan's doing, and he writes so many grants and brings so much funding in. He almost pays for that position himself. So it's really, and they, King Philip has that position, and what they're able to do, it's incredible. So I follow up on that. So yeah, that's important. Okay, anyone else all set?
No.
Okay, very good. Moving right along.
Thank you for your input, and we'll keep you informed as it rolls out.
School status update.
In your packet is this week's status update, mostly capturing data at this point. Given the quantity of materials we were putting into this week's packet, did not make graphs out of this, but do intend to do so between now and the next meeting. So the health metrics are listed for you first for both Franklin and Massachusetts. As noted previously, the vaccine information is also included. One thing, I think there's a typo for ages 12 to 15, I think that's 79% with one dose. But we're encroaching, at least in the aggregate, approaching that 80% number of individuals ages 12 to 19 with one dose. And so I imagine over the next couple of weeks, it's natural to figure that the fully vaccinated population among ages 12 to 19 will be approximating 80% as well. So we're keeping tabs of that, but we're also collecting specific information internally about the students who are enrolled in Franklin Public Schools, as well as our faculty and staff. And we sent a message around to our families earlier today, and a copy was shared with you as school committee members. And we, at this time, are focusing our data collection and quantification at the high school, simply because of the numbers. And we are at 75% vaccinated between students and staff at the high school. And again, we're still cleaning up a little bit. We have a few faculty and staff members' data to still collect, but not a huge number. And we do anticipate that student numbers are going to continue to increase over the next couple of weeks. I don't have information for you right now about any of our other schools, the middle schools. We had not focused there initially. It's labor intensive to gather this information. We didn't focus on the middle schools, just mathematically, with most of our sixth graders not yet being eligible. They're not gonna be at 80% for a little while. The cases are listed for you as well. We are sharing with you total cases in Franklin that are emerging on a weekly basis. And then we're also keeping track of cases that are in person that require the close contact tracing. And I know that everybody's eager to have masks lifted should we get to that 80% threshold. I would just note that that will drive up the number of students who are deemed as close contacts. That's going to create some additional administrative burden. Just want to sort of share the impact of that pretty plainly, that that'll just sort of increase the number of close contacts that need to be kind of managed and monitored and who are monitoring symptoms without masks, because that 3 feet range then extends beyond to 6 feet. And close contacts, I've been asked to remind folks around weekend activity. Test and stay allows individuals to test and stay in the schools, but those close contacts are still advised to quarantine over the weekends that among our kind of unvaccinated population. So those are some of the numbers for you. At individual schools, if the numbers rise above 5, we'll start to publish that individual school data. Test and stay is up and running. So kudos to Paula and the nursing team for getting test and stay up and running. And I do have to give CIC, our vendor, credit. I think we've had, now that they're on site, a pretty good time working with them. And they have been, I saw them a couple of schools today, they have been assisting us with the test and stay. So that is up and running, which is great, so that those asymptomatic close contacts can remain in the school building. We do not test without consent. That's been a frequently asked question lately. Consent forms are on our website, and they have been moved up to the top of the page, so they're easy to find. And we encourage families to choose that option if it works for them. And then the last thing, just to note, typically not going to put teaching and learning in here, but just as it's pandemic related, I thought it was kind of worth noting the MCAS score is coming out this week, and you'll have a fuller presentation about testing data later this fall. We're in the process of, like many districts, taking a look at those, as well as our internal data to see how students are doing, especially the MAP growth that we're doing now, as well as the oral reading fluency in K-2. And we're seeing a similar trend as to what's been seen at the state as well as nationally, with fewer students meeting or exceeding the standards and math being the particular standout area versus ELA. So you'll have much more information, but I did just want to kind of note that as I thought it was relevant in our back to school status update. And we're using the information, as you might imagine, to plan supports and interventions for students. Any questions?
Jen?
All set.
Okay. Tim?
Oh, we thought maybe
Tim.
All set.
Okay, Tim.
All set.
Judy?
All set, thank you.
Okay, MJ?
Okay.
Denise?
So I look at the high school numbers, which we're not really, the 73% may or may not represent the high school, I understand. I just worry that, you know, the vaccine has been available to those students for so long. There's only 73% that have received both doses. What happens if we don't get to 80%?
If we don't get to 80%?
Like, I feel like, because I see all these other schools, you know, in the news that have their high schools are at 94% already. So, I mean, what happens if we just don't get there?
As I understand it, the entire school would be under the mask mandate from the state for the duration of that mask mandate.
Do we have like raffles or something to encourage people? No, you guys laugh, but I know that some schools are having raffles and incentives to get vaccinated.
We had the lottery,
like, that we
the
have
lottery from the state in terms of incentives to get vaccinated.
I don't know, I just...
Yeah. Ice cream at the...
Pizza parties
at the top.
And just having the test and stay is up. So thank you for all the hard work. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Elise, anything?
I just want to say thank you for including all that information in the same chart at the beginning. Denise is complaining the charts are getting too long, but I think it's helpful to look back at where we were and compared to where we are. So thanks for doing that. And just a question about the testing consent. So if you, because you're a parent and things are really busy, you filled out so many things in the last couple of weeks or months, if you think you did that but you're not sure, who do you ask? Like, is there a way to know?
Paula?
You'd want to call your school nurse.
Yeah. Call the school nurse.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I think I did it.
If you use your same email, it'll tell you where you have an account.
Oh, if you try to do it again?
Yep.
It will say, like, you already did this?
That's what happened to me.
If people don't have access to a computer, we also have paper copies at the schools that we can use as well.
Okay.
And I just, if you don't mind, do the share. If I can just stress, the test and stay are just for close contacts of in-school exposures. If you are identified as a close contact because of an out-of-school exposure, you cannot participate in test and stay. I just need to stress that.
Thank you for saying that. We have been trying to increase that message. I think people are struggling a little bit to understand the reason why. What I'm picking up from the Department of Education is that our environment is a very controlled environment. These close contacts have been in a setting that's well ventilated, they've been wearing masks, and so the risk is lower in terms of them potentially having contracted COVID in our setting. However, outside of school, it may be a much less controlled setting, closer contact, no mask wearing, and so that's just a higher level of risk. So it's really for in-person exposures in the school setting.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So I've definitely heard that message. Like, I've read it in the letter. Like, I've heard that as a parent. So I guess it's like, what's the difference? I haven't had either of my kids haven't been close contacts in school. So, like, what's the difference? How do you know, I guess? How does the school know? So either
because through our contact tracing process,
okay,
we identify, so we know who the positive individual is. Mm-hmm. We do a contact tracing process of who's been closer than 3 feet fully masked, or who's been 6 feet if you've been unmasked, and then we identify community members who are close contacts. Those are considered in-school exposure close contacts, so therefore they are eligible for test and stay.
I understand. So then if somebody just calls you and says, can my kid test and stay on Wednesday or something, you're going to say, well, that wasn't one of the close contacts, it must have been the out-of-school transmission, so no.
Correct, okay. Yeah.
So then that child would stay home
in quarantine
and get a test somewhere.
Day 5, and then if it's negative, come back on day 8.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So now we go to information matters, budget subcommittee. We have not met, but just remind people that the budget subcommittee created this beautiful pamphlet, which really does a lot to explain the whole budget process and the needs and mitigation strategies that we've gone through and the future for funding in Franklin. So you're going to be seeing these all around. Denise is going to talk a little bit more about that when we come to the Harvest Festival coming up. I just wanted to remind people about that. So now I'm going to...
Yes. So the school committee will be hosting a booth at the Harvest Festival this Saturday, October 2nd. We'll be in Zone 5. We'll have some of the educational materials that Ann just mentioned, the budget flyer. We're also going to have the ride home flyer to hand out. We'll also have some games and prizes, so come say hello. As for MASC, they're going to be hosting a resolutions and delegate workshop this week that I'll be going to get ready for the November meeting, should I be going. And there'll be a goal setting luncheon on Friday at noon. So those will both be preparing for the meeting in November. So I'll have maybe an update at the next meeting.
Thank you. How about policy? You guys have been busy.
Yes, we have. And our next meeting will be on Wednesday, October 6th, and we from 6 to 7:30. Mm-hmm. And just wanted to ask if Sarah or Lucas had looked into where it would be, here or upstairs.
There is a council meeting that night, so I think we'll be upstairs in the training room.
Oh, they can go to the training room, yeah, we also have another meeting scheduled for October 21st. Mm-hmm. And just to let people know that the mask policy is not all.
Do you have access?
We worked on it at our last meeting. We were very excited that we were able to get back to, you know, reviewing some other policies. That's exciting.
Very good. How about joint PCCs? Did that group meet, Judy?
We met yesterday for the first meeting for this year. Every single PCC except one has a full board contingent up and running. It was discussions relative to equitable fundraising and ensuring the students across the whole elementary level have comparable experiences and comparable enrichment activities. There will be no field trips for the fall. Field trips can be start to be planned for the spring. Much discussion relative to some of the PCCs already having put deposits down on certain field trips that they may lose the money if they can't reschedule them, et cetera, et cetera. The PCC should engage with the principals in their schools for planning of field trips for the spring or enlightenment experiences coming into the schools along with that. That's it.
Thanks, Judy. Substance Abuse Task Force, Lucas?
So we, Paula and I, are meeting with Jen Knight to plan. We had planned prior to the COVID shutdown to have a safe host, but we've never held that meeting in their space. So that's our goal. Our first meeting will take place sometime in mid-October. We're just trying to make sure that we have the date.
Yep.
And there'll be more to come out of that committee. We're excited to continue that work.
School Wellness Advisory, has that met?
We have our first meeting of the year next week.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah. Beautiful. Sarah, Dr. Earn, I was going to ask you about, does the ad hoc superintendent evaluation need to meet before?
It would be helpful.
I was wondering
if
about
did
that.
Meet. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll work that out to get that together. Because that's, traditionally we do that. Did I cover all the... Good. Just for information matters, just following up on what Steve said about nonprofits, and it just reminds me again, speaking about supports for our families, just to speak about the largest charitable organization in our town is the Hockomock area, the YMCAs. Just to remind people, daycare is subsidized. Anyone who has need, they turn no one away. So just remind, they are still giving out grocery bags of food weekly at the three different Hockomock area-wise. They've given over 600,000 meals out during this whole pandemic phase. And also, they also have incredible amount of support groups for people who are living with cardiac-related issues, multiple sclerosis, cancer, diabetes. And then they have a whole group for youth with high body mass indexes, and it's a great support group for kids who are struggling with those issues. So Steve reminded me when I was thinking about, when you think about that, people think of the Y as swimming lessons, but it is an extraordinary nonprofit charitable organization in our community, and they're working incredibly with the Franklin Food Pantry as well, just to team up there. So it speaks to a lot of what Steve was saying, the importance of these groups all getting together and communicating and working together. So I just thought I'd add that as an information thing. So I think that is it on that. New business, Dr. Hearn.
So at the next meeting, I anticipate that you will vote on the MASC resolutions. There may be some policy coming out of the policy subcommittee, and if the ad hoc evaluation committee and I meet, there may be superintendent goals.
Can you maybe just send out some possible to us, and we'll try to work around it and make that happen sooner rather than later. Now consent agenda, we have to do it separately for the approval of the minutes, Dr. Hearn.
Okay.
So we have to take those separately because Judy was out of the country last time, so she wouldn't be
lumped in to do the whole consent agenda together.
Sure, so why don't I read those?
Yeah.
I'll just read them, there's two motions here.
Okay.
So I recommend approval of the September 14th, 2021 school committee meeting minutes, I'm sorry, as detailed.
Okay, so we need a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
From the September 14th, 2021, and a second.
Okay.
All right, and we'll do a roll call vote. Jen?
Yep.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Abstain.
Abstain, yeah. MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Elise?
Yeah.
And Ian, yes. Okay.
And I recommend approval of the new FHS clubs, book club, hiking club, and board and games club as detailed.
Okay, is there a motion to approve the new FHS clubs, book club, hiking club, and board and games club as detailed? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion, comments?
I follow the hiking club on Twitter, and they are so fun. Yeah. They have so many fun places to hike, so I highly suggest following them.
Okay, so motion to accept, recommend approval. Do we have a motion?
And a second.
And a second, okay. And I already asked, but yeah, thank you. My mind's going right now. All right, so seeing none, further discussion, the vote will come on the motion. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ian? Motion carries. Payment of bills, I did review the bills. They are in order. Payroll, Judy?
I did review the payroll. The payroll appears to be in order.
Okay. So I think we are all set. This is anything for the committee members. All right. So seeing none, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, roll call vote to adjourn. Jen?
Yep.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Ian, yes. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.